This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The Israeli Prime Minister postpones his visit to Turkey and Cyprus after being hospitalized, as while protests against his judicial plan intensify. Russian President Vladimir Putin says that the Ukrainian counteroffensive to retake lost territory has failed. Spaniards heading for polls in crucial general elections that could swing Eurozone's fourth largest economy to the populist right. Live from Tehran, this is World News. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. The Israeli Prime Minister has reportedly postponed his visit to Turkey and Cyprus, and that after being hospitalized overnight to get a pacemaker, that is, Israeli media report the cancellation of Benjamin Netanyahu's visits without offering further detail. He's expected to be discharged from the hospital later in the day, in time to participate in a key vote on his judicial reforms in the Knesset on Monday. The contested legislation has triggered back-to-back mass protests against his cabinet. The latest is a march of tens of thousands that reached Al Quds on Saturday, a day before the opening of the Knesset's debate on the reforms. The legislation is aimed at curbing the Supreme Court's power to void the cabinet's decisions. Opponents say that this opens the door to abuse of power by Netanyahu and his ministers. A while ago, we're joined by international lawyer Barry Grossman for his take about the ongoing protests in Israel.
Well, look, in general terms, we're seeing protests around the world against what is being characterized as authoritarianism. And certainly these proposed amendments, which would not only give the incumbent government's party final say over judicial appointments, but would let them override Supreme Court decisions, is something that it ought not to be surprising that liberals, if there is such a thing as Zionist liberals, would get up in arms about. But at the end of the day, none of this is any great surprise. There's nothing democratic about this occupying force and the way it governs. There's nothing in this which really is of any interest to those of us who support the Palestinian cause. And ironically, if anything, this move by Netanyahu's government, who, remember, managed to get put on hold corruption charges against him as he retook office again. The irony is that this is helpful to the Palestinian cause in that one of the things international courts look at where war crimes are being tried and the like, violations of international law, is whether the government in the place where the allegations are being made has pursued all avenues of investigation and prosecution.
The UK's military ties with Israel have repeatedly come under the spotlight, particularly in the face of the regime's atrocities against Palestinians. The city of Leicester, for instance, is the base of UAV tactical systems owned by Israel's largest arms firm, Elbit Systems. Members of a group called Palestine Action have laid siege to the factory, saying that they will not leave until the production of military equipment for Israel is completely stopped. A pro-Palestine activist Sarah Wilkinson joined us just an hour ago with more details.
We have been here now for 84 days, and we are going to be here until we shut Elbit down. This is a drone factory, and it supplies the Israeli regime with the drones that are used in Gaza that bomb and maim and terrorize the population, but also now, as we know, in Jenin as well. So it's really important that we lay siege on this place and we stay here until we shut the factory down. From top down in this country, they're doing everything they can to protect Elbit Systems. They're protecting the Israeli arms trade. So we've had several activists arrested, but we're returning to the site when we can. And it's not deterring us from shutting this place down. This is one of the most evil, toxic, deadly Israeli arms factories. And these drones are made on British soil because we supply the plastics and the tin and the aluminium and the steel that they need to make these deadly weapons. So it's essential that we're here. We've shut down two Israeli arm factories already, two Elbits. So this will be our third achievement when this factory is shut.
The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has categorically condemned the desecration of the Holy Quran in Sweden. Ayatollah Sayyid Khamenei says that the sacrilegious act was a bitter, conspiratorial, and dangerous move. The leader said that all top religious figures in the Muslim world agreed that a most severe punishment should be handed down to the perpetrator of the profane act. He noted that the Swedish government's support for the culprit amounts to a battle array against the Islamic world. The leader added that the Stockholm has a duty to hand over the perpetrator to the judicial bodies of Muslim countries. President Ibrahim Raisi also echoed the leader's remarks. He denounced sacrilege as a criminal act. The leader of Lebanon's Hezbollah movement warning Sweden that continued support for the desecration of the Holy Quran in that country would amount to a declaration of war against the Muslim world. Sadis and Nasrallah call on Arab and Muslim countries to cut their diplomatic and economic ties with Sweden. Nasrallah says the Swedish government's mere condemnation is not enough. He hailed Iraq and Iran's responses to the desecration of the Quran and called on Muslim states to follow suit. Iraq has expelled the Swedish ambassador, and Iran has refused to admit a new Swedish envoy. Let's move on. Israeli troops have forcibly evicted another Palestinian family from their home in the Khalidiya neighborhood of the occupied Al-Quds. The regime's forces violently arrested a man in front of his family as settlers took over their house. Let's now cross over to Ramallah to hear more about this latest Israeli crime from our correspondent, Mona Kandil. Mona, what do you have for us?
Well, 2 weeks ago, Israeli settlers forced the Palestinian family of Sublaban from the Aqbat al-Khalidiyya in the old town of Al-Quds out of their home, who they were had rented this home for over 70 years under the, let's say, the custodian under the Hashemite kingdom, let's say, control of Al-Quds at that time. But what happened today is that Israeli settlers raided the home of Sublaban, and they were, of course, the family that was forcibly evicted from their home, and the Israeli settlers threw out their furniture, and clashes erupted between the settlers and family members who 2 weeks ago were forced to leave the home. However, their belongings and furniture remained in the house, and they were trying to take the furniture and their belongings. However, the Israeli settlers prevented them under the protection of the Israeli forces. At least one Palestinian from the family of Sublaban was arrested by the Israeli forces, who immediately came to help the settlers and to force the family of Sublaban. And a number of activists were there out from the area. The Sublaban family was living in this house, in the building, since 1953. And however, the Israeli settlers claimed that they are not the real owners of the home, and that under the so-called absentee ruling or law, the Israeli regime can take out the Palestinians living in this house if, in case the settlers try to prove to the Israeli court that they are the real owners, or that even those Palestinians are not the real owners of the home, and that the settlers want to live in that area specifically. after 70 years, unfortunately, the family of Suleiman was forcibly took out from their home in the old town of Al-Quds, and the settlers were, of course, returning to the area because several years ago, all the apartments were taken and seized by the Israeli settlers. However, only one floor where the family of Suleiman was living there, surrounded by thousands of Israeli settlers. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, today they had to leave the area.
Okay, thanks for that, Mona Kandil, our correspondent in Ramallah. The Russian president says that the Ukrainian counteroffensive to retake lost territory has failed. Vladimir Putin made a comment as he hosted his Belarusian counterpart, Alexander Lukashenko, in St. Petersburg. Ukraine began its long-anticipated counteroffensive in June after months of preparation, but gains have been minor, with U.S. media saying the Ukrainians lost as much as 20% of their tanks and armored vehicles during the first 2 weeks of the operations. President Volodymyr Zelensky says that a counteroffensive is about to, quote, gain pace. Russian forces currently control more than a sixth of Ukrainian territory after nearly 17 months of war. Spaniards going to the polling stations in crucial general elections that could swing Eurozone's fourth largest economy to the populist right. More than 37 million people are eligible to cast their ballots. Socialist Pedro Sanchez has been prime minister since 2018. He hopes his government's reforms, crisis management, and handling of a stronger performing economy would persuade voters to keep him in office. But his party has been lagging in polls behind the Conservative People's Party, led by Alberto Núñez Feijóo. The Conservative leader wants to roll back many of the socialist reforms. Opinion polls indicating the election will likely produce a win for Feijóo, but to form a government, he'll need to partner with the far-right Vox. The Britain has been rocked by months of nationwide strikes, with government employees from various public sectors demanding better pay and working conditions. And that includes the country's National Health Services staff. Many are worried that a continuation of the walkouts would cause unbearable consequences.
Britain is hit with yet another wave of strikes over wages, job cuts, and working conditions. In the latest series of such strike actions, more than 20,000 rail workers walked out of their jobs on Thursday. Workers from 14 train companies took part in the strike organized by Britain's largest specialist transport trade union, the National Union of Rail, Maritime and Transport Workers. Many of those on strike complained that the sustained price rises for core products in the UK has made it increasingly difficult for the working class to make ends meet. Strikers said although the union members feel sorry that withholding their labor could impact people's travel plans during peak holiday season, they simply could not find any better way to express their dissatisfaction.
We always regret causing the disruption we do when we strike. We do apologize to every member of the public who's been affected by them.
The strike coincided with the last day of a week-long overtime ban by train drivers in Asluff. The strike action caused misery and travel disruptions for many across London and several other cities, with most of the 14 affected train operators run roughly half of their normal timetables. The strikes also hit cross-border trains serving Wales and Scotland, where staff were not directly in dispute. UK authorities warned that some disruptions was likely to continue into Sunday. The last in the series of three 24-hour strikes planned by the RMF comes next Saturday, 29th of July.
The strikes, which have been ongoing since last summer, have left the future of the country's ruling Conservative Party in tatters. The Tories have also been hit by other crises, ranging from scandals surrounding party members to Prime Minister Sunak's unpopularity to soaring inflation and their defeat in recent by-elections. And all that has severely damaged the party's chances of retaining power after the next general elections.
The The strike by railway workers come as Britain has been hit by similar such actions for the past year, with NHS staff being among main government employees calling for better wages and working conditions. The most recent one was a strike staged by senior doctors on July 20th and 21st. The British Medical Association said senior doctors will stage another two-day walkout on August 24th and 25th, with industrial action expected to put the country's National Health Service under more strain. The recent walkout by senior doctors followed a five-day strike by junior doctors, which marked the longest ever strike in NHS history. The back-to-back walkouts have already taken their toll on the country's healthcare system, prompting fears for patient safety. Imploring striking public sector workers to end their industrial action, PM Sunak offered a 6% rise, saying that was his last offer and no amount of strike could change his mind. The Premier stressed that there will be no more negotiations over pay. Doctors called the government's offer a savage real-terms wage cut, putting more pressure on Sunak to rethink his government's stance over pay rises. The pressure by the Brits on Sunak and his government over wages and working conditions on the one hand, and unprecedented 40-year high inflation along with the scandals within the Conservative Party on the other, have already had their consequences on Tories. Sunak's popularity rating dropped to the lowest level since taking office. According to a poll conducted by YouGov, some 65% of Britons have an unfavorable view of the Premier. That gives Sunak a net favorability rating of minus 40%. In the meantime, the Tories on Thursday lost two parliamentary seats in the country's by-elections to the Liberal Democrats in several cities, including Somerton and Frome. Those are among indications that if Sunak continues to maintain the policies of his predecessors, what the UK can brace for is even more severe consequences, not only for the Conservative Party, but maybe the whole UK public.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Listeners Special. In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this Sunday, July 23rd, 2023. I'm Atef Erfani, hosting this program today. And on behalf of all IRIB English Radio staff, I extend my deepest condolences to you on the arrival of the month of Muharram, the month of the martyrdom of the Master of Martyrs, Imam Hussein, peace upon him. Listeners, a special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through your emails, your letters, and your messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. And if you have any message for our great listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. As I always say, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Please keep us company until the end of the program. This is Listeners Special, and here, as usual, we've received reception reports from you from around the world, from Ivan Zeleny from Russia, from Arto Toisi from Finland, and again from Finland, from Johannes Lamy. So, Ivan, Arto, and Johannes, thank you for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio, and you have sent us piles of letters and emails from around the world, which I mention some of your names here. And later during the program, I will read these emails. Johannes Lamy from Finland has sent us a piece of email. Toshio Shibata from Japan has sent us an email. Ratan Kumar Paul, one of our old and regular listeners from India, has sent us a message, and from Canada we've received an email from Alan Willey, one of our regular listeners, and Siddhartha Bhattacharji from India has sent us a piece of email. Stay with us, please. I will be back with you. So let's see what Siddhartha Bhattacharji, one of our old and regular listeners from India, says. Siddhartha says, "Dear staff, here I submit audio file of your broadcast. Hope it will be a great help for you and your technicians. Kindly send me your program schedule, sticker, stamps, and other promotional material, which is available in order to represent your radio here in India. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Siddhartha Bhattacharji from India, we are so grateful to you for this message. The audio file has been received and, of course, appreciated. It was a great help to us, and such things, as you may know, helps us improve the quality of our programs. Siddhartha Bhattacharji from India, write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs, and please accept our electronic QSL as confirmation to your email. From Japan, we've received an email from Toshio Shibata, one of our regular listeners. Toshio says, "Dear staff, I received IRIB broadcast of medium wave here in Japan. On SW, there are not many transmitter sites in each country, but in MW, there are many. Thanks again for being in touch with me. Best regards." Salam from Tehran, the capital of the beautiful Iran. Toshio Shibata from Japan, thank you very much for sending this email to IRIB English Radio and Listeners Special Program. Let me inform you that you will be receiving an electronic QSL or EQSL from IRIB English Radio as confirmation to this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. After a short break, dear listeners, I will be back with you. Welcome back. It's listeners special, and let's see what our listener from Finland says. Johannes Lamy says, "Dear IRIB English Radio staff, I hope you are doing well. I'm Johannes Lamy. I am 17 years old, and I live in Finland. Last time I wrote to you some week ago, I hope the letter has reached you. I have enclosed the postcard to my letter. The postcard shows the Tower of Olympic Stadium in our capital, Helsinki. I would love to receive a confirmation card from you. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, and I do thank you for this message, Johannes Lamy from Finland. We also hope that you're doing well. We received the postcard with the picture of Olympic Stadium in the capital Helsinki, and it was beautiful. Thank you for it. Please accept our electronic QSL or EQSL as confirmation to this email, Johannes, and write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. Thank you, Johannes Lamy from Finland." And from India, we have an email from Ratan Kumar Paul, one of our old and regular listeners. Ratan says, "Greetings from India. Please verify my reception with your QSL card and send some postal stamps of Iran and other countries. Stamps collection is my second hobby. I am a regular listener of your radio. Thanks for this nice and informative program. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Ratan Kumar Paul from India, and thank you very much for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio and listeners especially. It's good to hear that you like this program and you find it nice and informative. Anyway, as soon as we could be able to send you and all our listeners the materials like the promotional items and souvenirs of IRIB English Radio, we will soon do it. At the time being, please accept our EQSL as confirmation to your email. Thank you, Ratan Kumar Paul from India. And after a short break, I will be back with you. Regular listener Alan Willie from Canada has sent us a piece of email. Alan says, "Dear staff, once again, greetings from Newfoundland, Canada. I have sent you few reception reports of IRIB shortwave broadcast as monitored here in Canada. Hope they will be verified from your side. Good wishes and thank you for the hard work. Salam and greetings to you, Alan Willie from Canada. And I do appreciate you for sending this message to IRIB English Radio and listeners' special program. Our appreciations to you also for the reception reports, Alan. We wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon and hearing your views about our broadcast." Dear listeners, again, I do extend my deepest condolences to you on the arrival of the month of Muharram, the month of the martyrdom of the Master of Martyrs, Imam Hussein, peace upon him. But before saying goodbye to you, I do send my warm greetings and appreciations to those of you who have kindly sent us reception reports as well as emails and letters and messages from around the world, including Ivan Zeleny from Russia, Arto Toisi from Finland, Johannes Lamy from Finland, Siddhartha Bhattacharji from India, Toshio Shibata from Japan, Ratan Kumar Paul from India, and Alan Vili from Canada. Please keep in touch with us, with IRIB English Radio and with the program Listeners Special. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Today we listen to the speech of Hujjatul Islam Salim Yusuf Ali.
Respected scholars and elders and brothers and sisters, عظم الله أجورنا وأجوركم بمصابنا بالحسين عليه السلام. I begin by first of all sending my salam and my condolences to our beloved master and leader, the awaited Imam of our time, Ajallahu Farjahu Sharif, and all the respected believers. I send my condolences on the arrival of the month of Muharram, of course, depending on the moon sighting. In Hadith, brothers and sisters, we're told that for our leaders, the arrival of this month, the sighting of the moon, was a transformational experience. Maybe there was a time in the past where this needed no explanation. For everyone, it was clear that when this new year comes about, unlike what most other cultures do in terms of a new year and celebration, for the followers of the Ahlul Bayt, it is a time of transformation. But in these days, it's very important for us to remind ourselves about what we are doing and why we're doing it, in order to be able to continue this tradition and to deepen and to further it. So our masters, the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, they would take this time very seriously. In one narration that's mentioned in our books of hadith, we're told that our eighth Imam alayhi as-salam says that the month of Muharram, even in the pre-Islamic era, was a time when the shedding of blood was prohibited. But it was the month in which they shed our blood. It was the month in which they violated our sanctity. It was the month in which they took our women and our children as prisoners. And then he says something very beautiful. He says, فَعَلَى مِثْلِ الْحُسَيْنِ فَلْيَبْكِ الْبَاكُونَ, which in a poetic way would say that if there's anyone who wishes to shed a tear, then let them shed a tear for the likes of Hussein alayhi salam. Then he describes the benefit of doing so. He says that somebody who is able to shed tears for Imam Hussein alayhi salam, it is an atonement for great sins. That is just one of the benefits of shedding the tear. And then he describes how his father, the seventh Imam alayhi salam, would be during this time. He says that my father would not be seen in the state of being joyful and jovial during this time. And as the days would progress, his grief would increase until it reached its climax on the 10th day of the month, in which it would be the day of his musibah and his huzn, his tragedy and his grief would be felt on that day in particular. And then he would say that هُوَ الْيَوْمُ الَّذِي قُتِلَ فِيهِ الْحُسَيْنِ, this is a day in which Hussein alayhi salam was killed. So when we gather together for these commemorations, they have incredible value. They are completely taking the seerah, the way of life of the great ones, and putting into practice at our times. What are we trying to get out of these? What is the purpose of them? I want to share with you some points of guidance from our great scholars, where they describe to us some of the outcomes that we would like to have and some things that we would want to stay away from during this time. The first purpose, brothers and sisters, that we're here for is to become acquainted with or to deepen our understanding of the teachings of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. We're here to learn. We're here to be reminded. This Imam of ours, this Shaheed, was able to demonstrate so much in his actions, and every one of them is worth studying from many different angles. And every year, you must have noticed that as you come to the majalis and you think about what took place and you learn from the different opportunities that are presented, your understanding, your ma'rifah, it deepens. This is one of the very important goals that we would like to achieve. Our understanding of Imam Hussein alayhi salam right now, compared to what is going to be, inshallah, after the day of Ashura, we should have increased. The second goal and objective, brothers and sisters, is that once we have reacquainted and deepened our understanding of the teachings of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, we need to be looking to see how can we be leading Husseini lives. This is one of the outcomes that we are trying to achieve. Some type of practical change that is taking place. Because knowledge is truly beneficial when it is acted upon. You've heard the story of the beggar who was so hungry that he was crying out of his hunger. And the rich man comes along and he says to him, what is it that's making you cry? He says, I'm so hungry. So the rich man had just bought a whole loaf of bread. He sits down next to the poor man and he says that you're crying, I'm going to cry with you as well. So the two of them have a good cry. And then the rich man gets up and he says, I had a good cry with you, goodbye. And the poor man says, well, thank you. But I was hoping for some of the bread, because really I'm crying because of hunger and the bread that you have would help me. The rich man says that I can give you my tears, but I can't give you my bread. That's for me, the tears are for you. That's not the way we want to be. Inshallah, we are here to offer our tears. We are here to offer our sacrifice. We're here to offer our sweat and our blood in terms of the amount of efforts that take place in running programs like this. The brothers and sisters who are involved with these, may Allah reward them for their tireless efforts. But we want more than that as well. How can we lead the Husseini lifestyle? And the third goal that our great scholars encourage us to think about is this, that how can we think about the larger goals of Islam and how to achieve those? Preparation for the Imam of our time, the revival and the reformation of Islam, introducing Islam to those who are hungry for guidance and they don't know about this beautiful teachings. This is one of the third goal that we would say we want to, inshallah, achieve from our gatherings. Now at the same time, our respected scholars, may Allah preserve them, they also say that we should be careful about a couple of things. What are those things? One of them, they say that when it comes to these gatherings, we should avoid doing what's called ifrat and tafrit, meaning avoid going to the extremes. What does it mean to go to the extreme? It's not that, of course, we know that there's no limit when it comes to the love of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. There's no limit when it comes to my passion for being a Husseini. But when it comes to my practice, I have to realize that Allah Ta'ala has given me responsibilities. And I want to make sure that my commemoration for Imam Hussein alayhi salam does not prevent me from performing my other responsibilities.
Oh, Hussein, you'll live forever in our hearts and in our minds. I swear to Allah, until my last breath, I will remember Hussein. Hussein, you'll live forever in our hearts and in our minds. I swear to Allah, whenever I face troubles in my life, I close my eyes and see your shrine and call the back every time. Oh, Hussein, you're the love of my heart. You are the light of my eyes. I swear to Allah, until my last breath, I will remember Hussein.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. Imam Hussein in the eyes of Sunni thinkers. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Imam Hussein's personality and movement has astounded every seeker of freedom from any creed. Many scholars and thinkers have spoken on Imam Hussein and the Epic of Ashura during the past 14 centuries. In a few episodes, we have discussed the views of Sunni scholars and thinkers on this grand personality and his unmatched movement. Stay tuned, please, for the third part of this discussion. Abbas Mahmoud al-Aghad was an Egyptian literary figure and journalist who has written a few books on the Ahlul Bayt or progeny of the Prophet of Islam. He is considered among the pioneers of the Egyptian contemporary literature. Abbas Mahmoud al-Aghat had an eloquent pen and poetic taste. Thus, he wrote more than 100 books and thousands of articles in various fields. Since his adolescence, al-Aghat had a bright intellect which helped him advance in scientific domains and have communications with contemporary thinkers via learning English, German, and French languages. In 1934, a group of scholars, journalists, and political figures held a session to mark his efforts in scientific and literary fields. The progeny of the Prophet of Islam have always enjoyed lofty position among Sunni scholars. Abbas Mahmoud al-Aghat, too, had authored several books on this. In one of his works, he calls the mission of the Prophet as the sunrise of light. His book, Hussein, Father of Martyrs, is about the backgrounds of occurrence of Ashura, and the book speaks on the merits of Bani Hashem, or the Hashemite clan, and the features of the Umayyad rulers. He considers Imam Hussein's rank so high that he doesn't let himself to compare him with Yazid, as the latter has no virtue to be comparable with Imam Hussein, peace upon him. Therefore, he writes, "I am not trying to compare Hussein and Yazid, because according to their personal characteristics, there is no reason for this, because Yazid had no small or great merit, while Hussein, peace upon him, had not a single flaw, even according to the admission of people like Muawiyah." When Muawiyah asked his followers to write something contemptible on Hussein, they said, "There is no imperfection in Hussein." In view of al-Aghat, Hussein, peace upon him, is from a family who grew up in the way of truth and justice and tried to set up religious imamat or leadership, whereas the Umayyad family sought to establish their worldly government to reach their mundane desires. Al-Aghat reminds that the Hashemite clan stayed in Mecca and served the people. While the Umayyads would commute in different cities to gain more wealth. Thus, after the bloodless conquest of Mecca by Muslims, Abu Sufyan and his equally wicked son Muawiyah embraced Islam pretentiously to have a share in victories. Abu Sufyan told the Prophet's uncle Abbas, "What a glorious kingdom." Abbas instantly said, "It's not kingdom. Rather, it is prophethood." The Egyptian thinker maintains that the battle between the Hashemite and Umayyad clans continued till the point that there was no bond between them. This battle never stopped, and it continued from generation to generation, although it apparently perished during the last month of the Prophet's life, yet it emerged in various fields such as the services of the one clan and betrayals of the other one. The generosity of the one clan towards the needy and excessive accumulation of money by the other. This reveals the Hashemite clan as the epitome of all virtues and the Umayyad clan as the symbol of every vice in history. Egyptian thinker and scholar Abbas Mahmoud Al-Aghat mentions subtle points on the issue of Yazid's forcing of Imam Hussein to swear allegiance with him. He believes that to escape the disgraceful and compulsory pledge of allegiance was one of the reasons for the Imam to set up his uprising. He writes, "It is amazing that Hussein, peace upon him, is invited to swear allegiance with a man like Yazid to sort of cleanse him, to be forced to testify that Yazid is the best caliph as is entitled to caliphate. At that time, there remain only two ways for Hussein, either allegiance or uprising, because they would never leave him on his own. But how can Hussein, peace upon him, who enjoys the strongest religious faith and is the grandson of the Prophet, swear allegiance? Therefore, to escape allegiance, he goes to Karbala and prefers bloody uprising to humiliating allegiance and fights manly so that, through fighting and martyrdom, he says no to Yazid and his followers and their illegitimate demands and seal the rightful battle between the virtuous Hashemite clan and the clan of wickedness, the Umayyad family."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Who is Imam Hussein? Why did he launch an uprising? Today, wherever humanity has undergone some defeat, either political, military, or economic, The roots of it can be traced into ignorance or abasement. That is, either they do not have the knowledge and necessary understanding, or they understand but have sold themselves cheap. They have bought into abasement and have submitted to viciousness. Imam Sajjad, peace be upon him, and Imam Ali, peace be upon him, have been narrated to have said, "O man, if your essence and existence is to be sold, it has only one price, which is the divine heaven. If you sell it to anything cheaper than heaven, you are at loss. Even if you are offered the whole world in exchange for accepting abasement and viciousness, it is not fitting. All those who in different places around the world have surrendered to coercion and money of the wealthy and powerful and have accepted this abasement, whatever position they are in, a scholar, politician, political and social activist or intellectual, they have failed to know their value and have sold themselves cheap. Many politicians of the world have sold themselves. Dignity is not simply represented by holding high positions like a king or a boss.
Ana mazlum Hussein, ana mazlum Hussein, ana mazlum Hussein, ana mazlum Hussein.
Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, made the army of reason overcome the army of ignorance.
Sometimes a person is sitting on a throne, bullying 1,000 people boastfully. Meanwhile, he is under the coercion of another power or center. He might be a captive of his own desires and lust, but today's political captives will not reach the latter because they are captives of major powers. The Prophet saves humans, so in the Quran, one important purpose of prophethood is said to be establishing justice. We sent our messengers with clear evidence to support their truthfulness and sent them the book and the balance so that people would maintain justice. The Holy Quran, chapter 57, verse 25. In fact, the divine books and the prophet were sent in order for justice to be established in societies, that is, to remove the symbols of oppression, coercion, and corruption. The movement of Imam Hussein was a movement of such nature. He said, "I rose up to reform the Muslim community of my grandfather, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him."
I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh,
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.